We're turning our attention to bugs, insects here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and talk about some very specific bugs, wicked bugs. And that's the front part of the title of the book, Wicked Bugs, the Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. And my guest now, the author of that, Amy Stewart. Amy is an award-winning author. She has 5 books on the perils and pleasures of the natural world, including 2 New York Times bestsellers, Wicked Plants and Flower Confidential. Her latest book is Wicked Bugs, as I said. She lives in Eureka, California, with us here in the studio today. So it's great to have her here. And man, has she got some stories that she has told in her book and some stories I know you're going to be interested in. And I bet you'll have some questions for her, too, as we move along today. Maybe you've had a strange experience, or maybe you've had a strange bug. We've had some postings on our Facebook page already, some cool pictures of bugs and strange ones at that. So you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or you can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Amy Stewart, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, it's great. It's great to have you. I really enjoyed. Although I have to tell you, there were times when I was cringing.
You got a little creeped out.
I got a little creeped out at those that sort of burrow, those things that kind of burrow into you and lay their eggs and
parasites. We don't want to think about the fact that, you know, we are an ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, there are millions and millions of creatures living in and on us all the time.
Yeah.
But we'd rather not think about that.
Well, but, you know, you talk, it's, I think, maybe early on in the book, right near the front, about the quadrillions of
yes.
insects that there are out there.
There are 200 million insects alive right now for every one of us.
200 million for
everyone? For every human. Yes.
Do they outweigh us?
they do outweigh us. The sheer mass of insects alive on the planet right now makes up most of the bulk of all living things. If you picture marine life and animals and humans and even arachnids and spiders, that's very small compared to the enormous quantity of insects on the planet.
Well, you wrote a book called The Earth Moved, if I'm not mistaken, which is about earthworms.
That's right. A natural history of earthworms.
And what caused you to turn your attention so fully to insects?
Well, I had written this book called Wicked Plants, which was sort of the dark side of the plant world. And that really took people by surprise because people don't think of plants as being bad. But in fact, most plants don't want to get eaten and they have all these defense mechanisms. You know, they inflict pain and suffering on people who try to eat them. And so I thought, well, if I did plants, I have to do bugs. And bugs, it's just the opposite. We're actually too afraid of bugs. But in fact, these are bugs that you really ought to be afraid of.
Yeah, there are some really nasty thing bugs out there.
There are. And, you know, I define wicked as some kind of creature that has had a negative impact on human affairs, that has killed people, that have been used as instruments of warfare. So really, for it to be wicked, it has to have hurt us in a pretty severe way.
And you do point out somewhere in the book, you point out the amount of what it costs, what the wicked ones can cost a country or the world in terms of dollars spent trying to control them or fixing the damage they've caused.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Japanese beetles alone, we spend $460 million a year. Mountain pine beetles are wiping out literally millions of acres of forest in North America every year. So these are big impacts, not to mention the toll on human lives.
Yeah, that's something. Were you surprised to find so many pretty awful specimens of insects?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I did have to narrow it down somewhat. If a bug just eats plants, that's not necessarily so bad. They're just staying alive. They're doing what they do. If they eat other bugs, big deal. So it had to be pretty catastrophic.
And I wanted to mention the illustrations, too, before I forget about it, because I love the illustrations. That kind of adds to the creepiness, maybe, and to the fun
Yes.
Of the book, and the illustrator was fantastic.
She's amazing. And as you know, she's right here in Madison. Bryony Morrow Cribbs, these are copper plate etchings. So this is a very old technique of doing scientific illustrations. And so when I'm at the Overture Center tonight, that's going to be with Bryony and an exhibit of her art and some of her fellow students here at the university.
And talk about what you are doing as long as you mentioned that.
Sure. Well, I'll be there at 6 p.m. and I have this crazy slideshow. So you'll get to see some of these bugs in person. I have the actual bugs. I have actual dead bugs, which in fact are right here in the studio with us. And of course, we'll have Bryony's art, which is just extraordinary.
Yeah, those bugs. What did you bring today? And actually, what we should do is take a picture and post it on our Facebook page. Maybe I can get Erica to do that over our news break.
But we should. So let it go on record that I have brought actual bed bugs into your radio studio. Now, they're dead. They're dead, and they're really small. But you're holding a box in your hand. You're holding a shadow box in your hand that has bed bugs. It has deer ticks. It has a black widow spider and a brown recluse and a scorpion and a cockroach, some of our most hated and feared bugs I have assembled into a little box that I carry with me on the plane.
And, you know, and yeah, so here they are.
There they are.
And do you ever have any trouble when you get on the plane?
I have not been stopped so far. So far, so good.
The black widow is kind of interesting because that's one that has, as you point out in your book, I believe, it gets a rep that's probably not as bad an insect as...
Right. There's a real mystique to the black widow. In fact, there were no reports of black widow stings really in the media until the early 20th century. And then this real hysteria developed about it. Now, you don't want to get bitten by a black widow. It's not going to be much fun. But they have not been known to kill people. It'll be painful. I have one in a vial here. You can actually see one that's not all dried out. It's floating in liquid there. So you don't want to get bitten by one, but the bites are actually pretty rare, and it's not going to cost you your life. It's just going to make you miserable.
Looks like it has a little hourglass, orange hourglass.
You see that red hourglass on its abdomen. Yeah. So and they don't all have that, so that's not definitive proof, but it's something to look for.
What is it? What is the poison in a black widow?
It's a very nasty venom that it uses to immobilize and kill prey. So, you know, it's not really out to kill humans. It's just out to get a bite to eat.
Now, in your book, you have how many insects do we have in here?
There are over 100 sort of primary insects that I describe at some length.
And you're not an entomologist, so you must have had to do a fair amount of research. I mean, you're a naturalist.
But I approach this as a journalist. So I get entomologists on the phone, and I fly around the country and interview them. And for every one of these wicked bugs, there is an entomologist devoted to it. There is. I love them.
Oh, man. Talking with Amy Stewart today about her new book. It's called Wicked Bugs, The Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. And, of course, that subtitle, we've got to find out a little bit more. We will find out a little bit more about that subtitle, too. But you can join in with your questions or comments or your experiences. Maybe you've had a good or a bad experience with a wicked one. With a wicked bug, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Your book's organized along the lines of, well, some that'll kill you, some that are painful, some that are deadly. Let's see what else have we got in here.
That's right. Dangerous, deadly, painful, horrible. Sometimes horrible just means they're sort of horrifying and destructive. Those that are destructive to plants and buildings and so forth.
And what I like about the book is that you have a nice little story, your own personal story, but a little story that kind of sets up the conversation almost every time.
And that's right. For every bug, there had to be some human drama that I could tell. So I didn't want to know that it could kill a person. I wanted to know who it had killed. That's what I was looking for.
Daniel in Rice Lake has a question. So let's go there. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Has any bug in history killed more people, been responsible for the death of more people than the lowly mosquito by transmitting the malaria parasite?
No, you nailed it. The mosquito is certainly the most wicked plant in the world in terms of the number of people it has killed. Malaria continues to kill hundreds of millions of people every year. And mosquitoes transmit 1 in 5 of all insect-transmitted diseases are carried by mosquitoes.
And the way that this happens, you talk about one of the kind of interesting things I think in the book is how you in sort of lay language talk about how the mosquito winds and how other insects, but how the mosquito in this case winds mm-hmm. up actually getting the disease and transmitting it to somebody.
Yeah, and that's I'm so glad you raised that point because I think some people assume that mosquitoes transmit disease by taking your blood and putting it into someone else's blood. And that's not really what's going on. What happens is they take up somebody's blood and assuming there's a parasite in there, it actually has to be able to grow and live and continue to mature inside the body of the mosquito. And then when the mosquito goes to another person, it transmits that parasite back in. So any kind of virus that can't live in the body of a mosquito or bacteria or parasite is not going to be transmitted by it, which is why they don't transmit HIV.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
That's why. Okay, well, yeah. that makes sense. Well, what are... All right, so we've got the mosquito. What are some of the other really bad ones that have been the result or have resulted in thousands and hundreds of thousands of deaths?
Well, there are some interesting ones. The black fly, there are any number of mosquito relatives, these sort of blood-sucking flies that transmit diseases using basically the same mechanism. The black fly is interesting because it can only lay its eggs in fast-moving rivers. Like, how's that for a specific ecology? But they transmit a disease called river blindness because it gets caught by people around rivers. I think the deer tick is one that here in the U.S. we're very concerned about, transmits Lyme disease. That's a big problem.
Yeah, and deer ticks, we have no shortage of them, certainly here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, people really have to get used to covering up outside, checking themselves really well for ticks at the end of the day. It's a big deal. It's serious.
Well, we have lots that we can talk about with our guest today, Amy Stewart. And again, you can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. You know, one of the insects that I want to talk with you about is the brown recluse, which you did bring in. And we're going to have a chance to do that. We'll talk about the brown recluse and we'll also talk about that louse that conquered Napoleon's army,
yes.
too. But we need to take a quick look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on The Ideas Net. And then we will be back with our guest, Amy Stewart, author of Wicked Bugs, here on The Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you listening in here on The Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, having some fun visiting with Amy Stewart, who is the author of the book Wicked Bugs, The Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. It's published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hills. It's great to have her along. And thank you so much for listening in. Questions or comments or experiences to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Christy in Madison's been waiting a long time. So, let's get to Christy here and see what's on Christy's mind. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions. One is, you say the mosquito, but I'm wondering, what about the flea? The flea has had a lot to do with, like, bubonic plague and all kinds of yucky stuff. And then another question I have is, how can you tell the difference between a true ladybug and a Japanese beetle? Because the one bites and the other one doesn't. And I'll take my answers off the air.
All right.
Oh, and very good book, Wicked Plants. I can't wait to read Wicked Bugs.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, okay, so the flea. I mean, the flea is definitely number two, I think, behind the mosquito because it did transmit the plague, does continue to transmit the plague. We still have outbreaks of it here and there. And it turns out that certain species of fleas are actually weirdly adapted to transmit it very, very well. Without getting too gross about this, you probably don't want to hear too much about flea vomit on your program, but it actually regurgitates plague virus in this very particular way. So, yes, nasty, nasty critter. And the second question was about lady beetles and Japanese beetles.
I think she might have been, there are two types of ladybugs that we now have in Wisconsin, and you can distinguish them. Their markings are a little different.
Yeah, you must be talking about an Asian beetle.
It's the Asian lady beetle.
Right, right. And I believe that one is quite bright red and the other is more of a brownish color, if I'm remembering this right. And I know the spot patterns are different. I mean, I'm not an entomologist, so I'm the person who goes around and interviews the entomologists.
Well, the ladybugs that are sort of native to here are a darker, are a brighter color.
That's right, right.
And the others are a little bit darker. And you certainly know. Well, actually, I don't think any of them are really biting to bite you. In most cases, they're, I think Phil Pelletieri told me once that they're just taking a little nip to see if you're worth chewing on. And they find out you're not, and they quit right away.
They're checking you out.
Just checking us out here. We had an email from Carrie in Milwaukee. I'm totally afraid of bugs, all bugs. My husband thinks it's crazy because they're so small, but is some of the human fear related to these wicked bugs? Our brains don't distinguish between the good and the wicked?
You know, I think we do sort of naturally fear the unknown, and I think we do have this fear of little creatures skittering around where we feel like we can't predict their movements or where they're going. But I do have to say that most bugs in the world are good, or they're benign, or they are simply not capable of biting us, even if they wanted to. They are not equipped with anything that could pierce our skin. I invite you to be afraid of the bugs in this book, or to have some caution of them,
sure.
In the same way you're afraid of running across the freeway during rush hour. That's healthy. Pretty much everything else is something you really shouldn't worry about.
Let's go to Lori in Madison next. Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We winter in Florida, and this question actually goes back to the black widows. We have some black widows in our garage, and we just wonder if there's any way to get rid of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can understand wanting to get rid of black widows. I have them around my house as well, and they tend to like little dark crevices and garages and so forth. So, you know, there's a certain amount of vacuuming up that you can do with a bug vac, but I think that any poisons you were to put out would pose a greater risk to you and your children and your pets than they would do you good getting rid of the black widows. I mean, the thing with those kind of spiders, and the same is true of the brown recluse, is that is where they will hang out. It's going to be in your garage, your shed. They might hang out in your camping gear that gets stored in kind of a weird place for a long time, so you want to shake that out real carefully. But none of them really want to bite you. They're not going to say, oh, here comes a human, and come running down from their hiding place and jump on you. They would have to be really cornered and confronted to go after you.
There have been some reports of families that had literally hundreds of black widow spiders in their home, and in the basement and in the house and one thing, and never had a bite in years.
Yeah, entomologists love to talk about this little study that was done, a family in Kansas that counted 2,000 brown recluse spiders in and around their home. And they lived there for 6 years, and no one had ever gotten bitten. So these, and spider bites are misdiagnosed, which is troublesome.
Yeah.
Because it could be a staph infection. It could be something else that needs a different treatment.
Phil Pelletieri often talks about that. And a lot of times people call and say, oh, I was bitten by a spider, you know, while I was asleep. And he has always said, no, probably not.
Probably not. You're right.
Well, thanks again, Lori, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Michael in Skokie, Illinois, let's go to you next. Hi, Michael.
Hi, a very interesting show. I was kind of curious about what are your thoughts about living in a great town like Eureka, which it probably has limited resources for writing a book like this, and the challenges of having to dig up all of this information when it's not necessarily locally available.
Oh, that's such a fantastic question. I make heavy use of my library's interlibrary loan service. I build big bibliographies on WorldCat, which is a way that all libraries around the world catalog their resources so I know what's available. And, of course, I get on the phone and call people all over the world, and I try to interview people whenever I travel. It's tough in a small town, but as you can imagine, if you're a writer yourself, living in a small town has its advantages. It's quiet. There's not a lot going on. It's cheap to live there. So it's a trade-off.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And on to RJ in Medford. Hi, RJ.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, talking about bugs, when I was in the Marine Corps stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, basically it was just glorified filled-in swampland that I think the government got cheap. But that aside, when I was out in the field, which was quite a bit, I dealt with everything, mosquitoes, black widows, ticks. But the one thing that got under my skin, literally, no pun intended, was the chigger.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing has just caused me so much grief. And I was wondering if she could shed a little bit of light on the chiggers and the best way to get rid of them.
You talk about chiggers in your book, Amy.
Yeah, chigger mites are nasty, and they have plagued soldiers for a long time. In fact, I'm surprised at how many bugs in this book are things that have impacted our troops, not just stationed in North Carolina, but all over the world, in Southeast Asia, right now in Iraq. These unfamiliar bugs are really awful. They're very annoying. They're almost impossible to keep out of your clothes because they are so, so small that no matter how carefully you try to seal yourself up, they are going to find a way in. And in other parts of the world, they do transmit disease. I don't believe that they are known to transmit any very serious diseases here in the U.S. because, again, you have to have enough people who are already infected for diseases to move around. So we're fortunate in that way. But they are nasty.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And there's, in terms of getting rid of them, I had a friend once say, I'd like to take an ice pick to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you just want to stab yourself with an ice pick to...
It's tough. And there are things like there's there's clothing, and I know that the military is using this now, clothing that is embedded with some pretty natural insect repellents. Yeah, exactly. And they help repel some of these little blood-sucking critters. So that's something to try.
From Josh in Marshfield, my wife and I were serving in the Peace Corps in West Africa when her and a friend came down with a very, very nasty rashes. They were rushed back to the U.S. because there was a fear that it was a flesh-eating bacteria. After getting looked at by a panel of doctors, it was determined that the rashes were caused by rove beetles, a small black and orange beetle that carries an oil inside it that burns horribly if exposed to skin. Apparently, they're found on six continents and have an irregular pattern of appearance.
Yes, that's true. And I do include those as well. And they turn up, for instance, they're so common in Nairobi that they're called the Nairobi beetle. They'll give you a nasty, nasty rash. And the slogan that public health workers use is brush, don't crush. And that means get in the habit of brushing bugs off of you rather than smacking them and crushing them into your skin. Because in the case of this beetle, that is how you get this bad rash, is you swat at them.
And in fact, you talk in your book at some point about a country that had got an information campaign going among people to blow the insects off.
Uh-huh. It's actually, yeah, that's actually another good technique in addition to brushing them, is just to give them a quick breath of air to get them off of you.
Eric in Oconomowoc, we turn to you next. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I had a question about, I know that my first fear of bugs was after I watched the movie Arachnophobia. So I was going to ask about the Venezuelan spider and if what's portrayed in the movie is real, and if you could talk about that particular spider, and I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
You know, I didn't see the movie, so I actually can't speak to that one. I'm not sure what species we're talking about. There are some freaky Latin American spiders, I will say that. The Brazilian wandering spider, for instance, is one that I put in the book because somebody tried to smuggle hundreds of them in a suitcase out of the airport in Rio de Janeiro. This was an exotic insect collector who was going to sell them to other collectors
around the
world.
And they're attackers, aren't they?
They are actually aggressive. They are one of the few bugs. This is so uncommon, but they are one of the few critters that will actually hunt prey. They will actually reach out and grab their prey. So not something you would want to have. This is not a suitcase you would want to have come open on the plane. They were very glad that they caught it before they got on the plane with it.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Valerie in Burnham Wood, who says, my father lives in Deerbrook, Wisconsin, north of Antigo, was bitten by a brown recluse spider that apparently was in his basement, which he then ended up with a huge hole in his back and had to take some major antibiotics to fight and heal the bitten site.
Well, it could be. Now, this will get you a lot of phone calls if I say this, but the brown recluse is not thought to be very prevalent in Wisconsin.
No,
there are 16 states, and I was careful to actually list all 16 of them in the book, even though it makes for a little boring paragraph, because people are very wedded to the idea that they have them, that they've been bitten by them. The only way to definitively diagnose a brown recluse spider bite is to catch the spider. There is a type of biopsy that can be done, but for the most part, these bites do get misdiagnosed, and it can lead to a delay in the proper treatment. So,
there you go. Let's go to Chuck in Shell Lake next. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. I want to make a comment on something that I didn't call about first, and that is chigger bites. Now, when I was a kid, I'd go visit my grandparents down in Kentucky, and you go out, you know, for a picnic or afternoon in the countryside, and half of us would end up with chigger bites. Now, what those people would do about it was they'd take nail polish and paint the chigger bites. Apparently, the chigger lives under the skin for a while, and that causes your problems with the chigger, and the nail polish then suffocates them. Or that's the idea behind it. But it worked, you know, so that's all I can say about that. I wanted to tell you a story about a friend of mine's black widow spider, as you might call it, because he had his bed, and right at the top of his headboard was a huge black widow spider, and she lived there for years, and he paid no attention to her whatsoever. He considered her a friend, really.
I love it. There's somebody who is tough around spiders. I will say about the chiggers, they seem to leave their little feeding tube behind in a wound, and so that is the thing that can get under your skin and bother it. Nail polish, I mean, it may well just dry it up or something. I'm sure there are lots of ointments and things you can put on that to get that little feeding tube out and reduce the swelling.
Yeah. And then the other thing was when I was 20 years old, I went out to Colorado, and the first thing that happened to me was I got bit by a tick out there, and I didn't realize what was going to happen to me, or else I would have taken a knife out and chopped a big chunk of meat out of my leg. But I got spotted tick fever, which pretty much, I believe, fried my pancreas and did a real damaging effect on my heart, because ever since then I've had nothing but problems along those lines. And at the time I went to the doctor, he says, we don't know too much about this, you know. And so I was just wondering, has there been any advances in spotted tick fever medical science or anything like that?
Treating it?
To my knowledge, these tick-borne diseases that we're seeing in the U.S. have proven to be hard to treat, and it requires long courses of treatment, and it is pretty tough. I mean, I think the message for people out there, you need to check yourself all over, and if you don't have a friend that you're close enough with that you can check each other out at the end of the day, then you need to get in front of a full-length mirror and really look. And like I say, I think these insect-repellent clothing, they even make boots, I think that's actually a pretty good thing if you're going to be out in a tick-infested area, or just spray yourself real well.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Cindy in Brown Deer, hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm calling because I heard you talking about Lyme disease, and my dog gets shot every year for Lyme disease. I'm wondering why it's taking so long to develop one for humans.
Yeah, it is a tough disease. It is something that we didn't know anything about until quite recently. Now, looking back, it appears that people were seeing it throughout the 20th century, but only recently was it even identified and named, and it has been a long, slow struggle to really figure out a way to get on top of this thing. I have friends who live with it, who've been sick with it over and over again, whose children have been sick. It's a big problem, and it's just been a real slow battle to get on top of it.
Yeah, it's too bad. Thank you for calling, Cindy. You know, we've just learned, in fact, go back to Phil Pelletieri here for a minute, because Phil announced the last time he was on my show that the brown marmorated stink bug has arrived in Wisconsin.
Yes, yes.
And not a good thing. What did you learn from about that bug from researching in your book?
Well, very unpleasant to have. Now, so this has been a problem on the East Coast. This is an Asian non-native invader, and it very much wants to come inside to your house and live with you in the winter and get warm. So very social in that way. And it's very unpleasant for people to have to constantly be getting these things out of their house. There were stories of them climbing up Christmas trees and getting in the drawers with the dishes and the cups and the forks and the spoons. I mean, they get everywhere. And increasingly, they are being monitored for problems with for agriculture as well. It looks like they are going to be a bigger and bigger problem for crops, too.
And they're stinky.
And they're stinky. If they are crushed, they smell bad. Yes.
Yeah. So that's another one. Blow or wipe off if it lands.
That's right. Try to get them out without crushing them, or you're going to have a nasty smell in your house.
You know, one of the we're talking about economic impact of some insects and the destructive and sometimes indirect destruction that can be caused. One that caught my eye as I was reading your book was the Formosan subterranean termite.
Oh, man, yeah.
Tell that story. I mean, I'm not sure that everybody's aware of its relationship with the terrible things that happened in the South.
Yeah. So the Formosan subterranean termite is a big problem in the South. And in New Orleans, it has been slowly chewing away at the seams of the flood walls. It turns out those seams are made out of sugarcane waste, and that is like candy to those termites. So years before Katrina happened, entomologists in the area were sounding the alarm about termites weakening the structure. Nothing was done. And Katrina happened, and the termite experts just had the sickening feeling in their stomach as they watched the flood walls give way. And even now, they've been unable to convince the Corps of Engineers to really take this seriously and to try some of the programs they've come up with to try to get termites out of these flood walls.
Yeah, and they've got, this doesn't make any sense to me, because they have some ideas and they have some ways to perhaps deal with them.
They've come up with a solution. You put some bait nearby to lure the termites away from the flood walls onto dry ground where it's easier to tent a little baited structure and use chemicals. Problem is, you can't put chemicals in the water with the flood walls, right?
Right.
That would be very dangerous. But you can lure them away, and that's what entomologists would like to see happen.
And the loss of life and the billions of dollars in damage.
Yeah, and you know, anyone will tell you, and the termite folks in New Orleans will say this as well. The thing that destroyed New Orleans was a hurricane. So
right.
If we're gonna,
right.
You know, there's only so much blame we can lay, but certainly it appears that the weakening of the flood walls with the termites could have played a role.
Is there an insect as you studied it? Which one perhaps was the most interesting to you in terms of? It maybe in terms of its lifestyle or its how it lives and dies.
I have to confess that I was most intrigued by the parasites, and they are the grossest things in the book, and nobody really
gross.
I know, and nobody really wants to talk about them. When I was working on this book, after I'd done all my research and I was just writing, I was trying to get a bug a day, get a first draft of every bug done. My husband would come home at the end of the day and he would say, "What bug was it today?" And over dinner he'd have to listen to me talk about the bug I'd worked on. And those parasites can be tough to hear about while you're having dinner, but I was just amazed by the intricate life cycles they go through. It's just fascinating.
Give us a life cycle of one that you found really interesting.
So for instance, something that mosquitoes transmit, there's this disease called lymphatic filariasis, which is elephantiasis.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this works, this is a little parasite, and the little babies swim around in people's blood. There are adults living in the body as well, and they lay eggs. Little babies swim around in your blood. I know. And mosquitoes will take a bite, will take up some of those little baby parasites. They get into the body of a mosquito. They go through a couple more stages of life inside the body of a mosquito. And then they have to get back into a human in order to continue their life cycle and grow into maturity. The fascinating thing is because they only want to get back into the body of a mosquito, they don't even swim around in the blood except in the evening when mosquitoes are biting. So healthcare workers can't even do blood tests on people to see if they even have this disease unless they draw blood in the evening when mosquitoes are biting. Otherwise, they don't even show up in the blood.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. How do they know? It just blows me away.
They do seem to have some insects, at least the hunters that you talk about, have... Is it intelligence or is it... I mean, they have to set traps and they have to hunt and...
You know, I once heard somebody say, every animal is as smart as it needs to be. And I think that is true of insects as well. They are each as smart as they need to be to live the kind of life they live.
Well, I'm telling you, it's a fascinating book. And you're, again, let's talk about, you're in the Madison area tonight.
Yes.
So you're in Madison.
Uh-huh. So tonight at the Overture Center for the Arts at 6, and Bryony Morrow Cribbs, who's a student here, she's in the MFA program for printmaking, and she'll be with me and her art, as well as some other printmakers. They've done this exhibit called Bestiary, and so these are all strange and wonderful creatures. So they're exhibiting that art. I'm going to give a talk in a slideshow, and hopefully Bryony will entertain a few questions about her process as well.
Oh, well, it's been great fun talking with you, Amy. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Amy Stewart, she's an award-winning author of 5 books on the perils and pleasures of the natural world, and her latest is Wicked Bugs, The Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects. And we didn't get to Napoleon's army, but you know what? Read the book, and then you'll find out all about the louse that conquered the army. Oh, boy. I tell you, it's quite a read. It's really interesting. Looking ahead to tomorrow at 11, you will not want to miss my visit with the ladies of the Divine Rhubarb Committee. Yes, you hear me right. It'll be a lot of fun. And at 11:45, Dennis Dimmick from National Geographic Magazine joins us. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.